This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
I'm just going to sit here laid back to this nice mellow beat, you know, and drop some smooth lyrics.
Here we are once again talking about comics and things. In this episode of Comics in Black and White, it's going to be an all Sparky Demands Answers episode. I have a lot of comics to talk about next week, but I don't have any of my notes with me while recording this, so that makes it difficult to talk about them. So we're just going to answer a couple of questions that Sparky had, because he's starting to load them up on me. He's been getting in the rhythm of asking them, so we have stuff to talk about. So let's jump right in to the first question that Sparky demands that I answer. His question is, I've heard you mention a few times that the talented artist J.K. Woodward gave you advice about how to give the music of David Bowie a try following the legendary singer's death. What advice did he give, and more importantly, how did you respond to the music? Did any one song or album amaze you, and does Bowie live up to all the hype? So J.K. Woodward is an artist that I met at the first Comic-Con that I went to. I've only been to a couple. He actually invited me to the second one that I went to. And he's a great artist. He does fully painted work, not digital, on canvas. You know, a lot of artists do digital more and more. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's just something about seeing it on a canvas and knowing that there's a physical copy that exists from something that you see. The first time I met him, he was doing a Ninja Turtles panel at the convention that was being put on by the comic shop that I was going to, which is still probably my favorite comic shop, Coast City Comics in Portland, Maine. And he was doing the panel with Eric Burnham, who has written a lot of stuff for IDW. He's written most, if not all, of the Ghostbusters stuff. He's written a little bit of Ninja Turtle stuff. I'm sure he's written plenty of other stuff, too. At the time, J.K. Woodward, he did one variant cover for the IDW Ninja Turtle series. And he's done a lot of Doctor Who and Star Trek stuff for IDW. At that time, he had there was a crossover Star Trek Doctor Who crossover. I think it was called Assimilation 2 that he had done. So that was the first thing that I read that he had done. I'm not a Star Trek or a Doctor Who fan particularly. I've actually checked both of those things out specifically because of J.K. doing art for those things. He currently has a Star Trek series that the first issue just came out this past Wednesday. I believe it's called A Mirror Broken. I don't have notes in front of me on that, but since we're talking about him, I might as well talk about what he's doing. He's a great artist, a great guy. He did my favorite commission I've ever gotten done, which is an homage to the broken bat where Bane is breaking Batman's back over his knee, and is Rocksteady breaking Donatello's back over his knee. Which works out well because in the Ninja Turtles series, Rocksteady and Bebop beat Donatello just about to death. So kind of combined that and the broken bat thing and made a great piece of work for me that I absolutely love. But anyways, I knew J.K. was a big David Bowie fan. He's a big music fan. He's always posting stuff. When David Bowie passed away, I sent him a message and just said, what should I listen to? So he said, get a pad of paper and a pencil and give me a call. So I gave him a call. And he told me all sorts of stuff about David Bowie. Now, for me, my main taste in music is really more like old school hip hop, underground hip hop, stuff like that. I mean, there's plenty of rock and stuff that I like, and I like a variety of stuff, but I don't tend to just be easily drawn into, you know, stuff in the greater category of rock unless something catches me. And for David Bowie, I just never really listened to him. I, of course, knew plenty of songs, but I didn't have any really good breadth to my knowledge of them. And I've always been of the opinion when you really want to get to know an artist, instead of listening to greatest hits, find a good album to get into. And that's a good starting point. Then you can go from there. So he told me about all sorts of different things about David Bowie, and I really don't remember all the stuff he told me, because if any of you listen to David Bowie or big David Bowie fans, you know that there's a lot of variety to the albums, to the sounds that David Bowie has. So the one that really resonated the most with me first off was Diamond Dogs. The first song that caught my attention was Rebel Rebel, which I think is probably the most, you know, radio friendly, approachable song. But when I told JK that, he told me to listen to Sweet Thing, Candidate, and then the Sweet Thing Reprise is like one continuous listen. Those are three tracks, and you can hear the theme continuing through the three different tracks on the album. And doing that, like, that's definitely a great portion of the album. So that was the album that really resonated with me the most. And I haven't really dug in a whole lot more because, like I said, it's enjoyable to listen to, but I don't have the time that I used to have to listen to music. I'm usually listening to it on the go. So a lot of times when I'm listening to music, rather than listening to music like I would watch a movie where I want to focus and I want to enjoy the movie and pay attention to it, I'm usually listening to music kind of just either listening to something that I have already enjoyed or listening to something that fits a mood, rather than really listening to explore and expose myself to other stuff in the same way. It's more limited that I do that. So I will still most likely slowly listen to more David Bowie stuff, but it's kind of like once you find that thing that you really like, you kind of tend to stick to that thing. I've always used an analogy comparing it to Chinese food. When you go to Panda Express, you get orange chicken every time if you like orange chicken, because you know you like the orange chicken. And you don't want to leave with an experience getting Chinese food where you're just like, well, that was okay. So, when I would get orange chicken and something else, and I would try different things with that something else, but I always got the orange chicken because it was reliable, and it didn't have to be the best food in the world, but I knew what I was getting. I knew I enjoyed it. I knew to what extent I enjoyed it. So it didn't matter if maybe there was something else possibly out there that I enjoyed more. It's kind of like that, I think, when you're, with anything that you're reading, listening to, watching, whatever, you know what the reliable stuff is. So if you're limited in how much you can immerse yourself into that, you're going to stick with the more reliable stuff. So if I want to listen to David Bowie, I'm probably going to put on that album because I know what I enjoy in it. If I'm only listening to a couple of songs, I know where I'm going to start listening to the album. And that's just how it is. So anybody listening that has a really strong favorite David Bowie song or album that I should check out, shoot me a tweet at Who's Paul on Twitter and let me know what I should check out, because I'm always looking to expose myself to more art and I'm always willing to check something out. And usually that's a good way, instead of just knowing that there's an immense amount of stuff I can listen to from David Bowie, getting a single recommendation is kind of a good way to dive back in. Does Bowie live up to the hype? He definitely does. I mean, you look at all the songs that he's done that we've known and the versatility of those songs and the different ways that we've been exposed to David Bowie, let alone the acting and, you know, other stuff that he's done. He's a very creative individual. And you look at the amount that an artist has inspired so many other artists after them. And David Bowie is a good example of that. That's why I've always loved an artist like Tom Waits. Tom Waits is one of my favorites, and he has just influenced and inspired so many different other musicians. And, you know, I had always complained that whenever I would hear a Tom Waits song just out and about on a playlist in a store, or you hear it in a movie or a TV show or something like that, it's always somebody else covering the Tom Waits song. And I want to hear Tom Waits doing that song. And the only Tom Waits songs I hear are usually the ones that I don't like as much as the ones I'm hearing being covered. So you see the influence everywhere. I just finished watching not too long ago the show The Wire, and the intro music to that show is a Tom Waits song, and every season had a different artist performing it, and only one of the times was a Tom Waits, and I think that was season 2. So, you know, you look at the scope of the influence the artist has, even if you may not be enthralled by what that artist is doing, you can still see where the influence spreads out. A good way to find new music, too, is to find an artist that you really love and find out what their influences are and start backtracking that way. I've already talked about doing that with Usagi Yojimbo, where I checked that out because of the crossover with Ninja Turtles, which it's not the same thing. It's not the inspiration there. But then once I got into Usagi, well, I had a lot of respect for what Stan Sakai was doing, so I wondered what are his influences. So I went back to check out, Akira Kurosawa movies, and I started reading Lone Wolf and Cub. And then because of those influences, then also the character of Usagi is based off of Miyamoto Musashi, I checked out the novel Musashi, which isn't the easiest thing to find. I'm still not done with that. It's a very long book and it's fantastic. So I really opened up my breadth of what I would read and watch, and all because I really, really loved this one thing. So it starts you off from that place of excitement of like, this is something I love. This is something I'm passionate about. So it's really easy to delve that passion into other things, even though watching a movie from the 60s that's in black and white with subtitles isn't the most approachable thing. Knowing the influence that movie has had on other things makes it more approachable. And, you know, in that case, too, having read a lot of Usagi, I'll come across movies, other books, whatever, that he has directly drawn from. So I'd be like, holy crap, this story is this other story in Usagi. And there's a lot of examples of that. I mean, in Usagi, he has Lone Goat and Kid, which is a takeoff of Lone Wolf and Cub. He has stories that have been based on all the Kurosawa movies. It's just fantastic to see all that. So, you know, David Bowie is the influence to some other stuff, and I didn't backtrack to find him that way, but it's a good way to find stuff. That's also how I really got into old school and 90s hip hop, is I got really into underground hip hop. That's the first thing I got into. So then whenever I would stumble across, an influence, something that was sampled, a line that was used, something that, an underground hip hop artist drew from for their creations, it gave me an in to buy into something else. And that's how I got into De La Soul and into Rakim and into, so many other things, was just from being able to come across those influences, and then you can expand and expand from there. So I think that answers Sparky's question pretty thoroughly. If he has any follow-ups, then I'm sure we'll hear about those in the future. Now on to his other question. This was a pretty good one. So I just recently finished reading, and I'll talk about it more on the next episode that I do, when I'm going to dive deeper into the comics that I've read in the past week or so. And I've had a pretty epic comic reading week for me, at least. But I finished reading Royal City Volume 2, which it's a book from Jeff Lemire. He does the writing, the art, the whole shebang pretty much is him. It's published by Image, and it's a pretty emotional book. If you've read any of Jeff Lemire's indie stuff, it can get pretty emotional, and this book definitely is no exception. So this is his question. After reading something extremely sad, like in Royal City, what's the best thing to read or do to even out your mood? So first of all, I would like to talk about when I'm apt to expose myself to something that will be upsetting in some way. Like Royal City is a very sad book. I try to avoid immersing myself too much in things that are just miserable, which I'm not saying Royal City is, but just in general, things that are just too negative, too terrible. I don't like exposing myself to those things too constantly. It's not that it's bad to have some exposure to those things in movies or music or comics or whatever. But for example, I was watching Game of Thrones, and I really liked a lot about the show, but there was a lot of things that kind of I was really reluctant to allow myself to get too absorbed into it. So what I would do is I would buy a season when it came out, because it would always be on sale, and I would watch it, and then I would take it, I would go and I would trade it in at Bull Moose Music and get trade credit, which was probably pretty close to what I paid for it. Like, I'd lose a little bit, obviously, but it was a pretty good turnaround, considering that I just wanted to watch it. And then I'd have that trade credit to use on other stuff. So it was a good way to watch it, but not keep it and feel like it was a bigger part of me, because there was just always a lot about the show that I didn't want to be a constant part of, you know, some of the extreme violence and, you know, let alone, you know, some of the excessive, you know, nudity and there's nothing wrong with some of that stuff, but I just feel like it's a show that takes everything too far, at least for my taste. If you like it, that's fine. Like what you like. But so I didn't want to continue to build a collection of Game of Thrones and have this be a part of like my stuff, my, you know, a big element of what I have and what I love. It was enjoyable to watch, but I wanted to kind of experience it and move on. Well, I got to season 4. And towards the end of the season, it wasn't the last episode. It was the third to last or second to last, maybe. But there's an episode where, and forgive me for not remembering anybody's names, but I don't. The Tyrion Lannister had his champion fighting for him against a really big guy. I believe it was the Mountain, I think is what they refer to him as. He was the Hound's brother, if I remember correctly. But anyway, so they fight. It ends really, really graphically. I had to stay up to watch this show. I was staying up until like 2 a.m. to watch it, because I'd have to wait till my wife was asleep, because I wouldn't even watch around her. So my kid couldn't be up. My wife couldn't be up. I was watching it super late to watch it. So here I am at like 2 a.m. and it ends in that horrible, horrible way. And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't go to bed right now. So I ended up watching another episode, which is not like that one was, you know, squeaky clean or anything. But it didn't end that way, so it allowed my mind to kind of move on from it. But that was when I realized, like, this is taking too much out of me. Like, I'm really having to go out of my way and run myself down, staying up too late to watch this. And, like, I feel the misery that I'm absorbing my mind in when I watch it. Because, of course, when I watch it, I'm buying a whole season, so I'm binging on, like, 10 episodes or however long the season is. So I tried to avoid, like, really immersing myself in something. But there's plenty of stuff out there that can be really, really sad or horrible in some ways, but it'll be worth it to me to expose myself to that because of other factors. Like there's ways that, you know, there's things that redeem it, make it worthwhile. And it's not just, you know, subjecting yourself to misery for the sake of it. So Royal City is an example of that. It's a very sad book. When you just think about like the basics of what it is, but it's a beautiful story. And I mean, it's still going. I'm just through the second volume and I don't know if there's a planned end to it or if it's just an ongoing as long as Jeff Lemire wants. Knowing him, he probably has like a greater scope in mind and you know, there's some kind of wrap up to it, but I just don't know if that has been expressed or not. So if anybody does have that information, tweet me at Who's Paul and let me know if you know the details of that. But so when I read something like reading Royal City, I was fine afterwards. It's not like I needed something to wash that out of my mind. There may be other, you know, there may be times though where I'm not. If there's other stuff that's bothering me already that can add to that sadness or that mood, you know, we all deal with a lot of stuff in our lives and I'm no exception to that. I have a lot of weight on me with different things. And sometimes if those things are heavy and then I read the wrong thing that's also sad or heavy, it can just add more to that weight. So what do I read or do to even out my mood? The number one go-to thing I have when I just need to kind of empty my mind is I'll play Madden. I got Madden 18 on the PS4. And I like playing the Madden Ultimate Team. I actually haven't touched anything but the Madden Ultimate Team on that one. I feel like they really improved how it works and they made it a lot more realistic to continue to improve your team without having to either spend real money or play with people online. I hate playing with people online. It's one thing, I mean, playing with people I know online is great, but playing with a random person online, I absolutely hate it. Don't like it at all. I've never liked it in any game. But playing Madden, I don't have to think about it. I'm just good at it. It's enjoyable. I love football. I love the team that I'm building. I've put effort into earning all the players that I have. If you don't know how Madden Ultimate Team works, it's kind of like based on like if you had cards of the players, they all have rankings and stuff, but there's different ways to earn those players. There will be challenges where you earn stuff. You can collect stuff to earn stuff. There's an auction function on it. There's a lot of different ways to go about it, but essentially like you can get players in random ways and you can get players in purposeful ways, but you're going to pay for it if you do that. So like on my team, I'm a huge 49er fan. And I have Steve Young as my quarterback, and I got him because they had a highly rated Steve Young. And then my best wide receiver is Randy Moss, and he's rated a 98 out of 100. And that was pretty awesome because that one I got randomly with a trade-in thing that they have on there. So that's just some examples, but I love my team. I love the team that I made. So it's like it's enjoyable just to kind of like see this thing that I made and collected, even though it's all digital just in the game. But I don't really have to think super hard with playing it. The challenges are fun. Sometimes they can be kind of difficult. And if I'm not in a great mood and I'm trying to get some out of my mind, usually I try to avoid things that are too much of a challenge, because it can just be frustrating and make it worse. So that's one thing that I do is I'll look for something like that can kind of just be a mental escape. Another game that I like to play for that actually I own the newer one, even though it's been out for a little while. Shadow of Mordor or Shadow of War is the second game. It's a game based on Middle Earth, so, you know, like Lord of the Rings world, and it's just so much fun to run around killing orcs, and you can just do that mindlessly, or you can get into the mission stuff on it. So that game's a lot of fun, so that's something that I'll do, if I just kind of need to escape stuff. If I need to read something lighter or different to kind of empty my mind of something that is a little too oppressive like that, I usually go to something that's just kind of the go-to. Like, you know, I love Ninja Turtles. If I can just pick up and read Ninja Turtles and it's going to kind of be an escape from that. I'll catch up on reading Valiant Comics, you know, something like that. So I'll try not to get into another like really pointed heavy book. I'll try to get into something that either I just need to catch up on, or, you know, when in doubt, I'll go for something like from the big two that's going to be more superhero-ish for kind of an escape from the stuff that like does have more real world elements in it. So those are kind of the approaches that I take. Watching something, I would usually go for a TV show rather than a movie just for, you know, time purposes. I don't often have 2 hours to just sit there unless I'm sharing that time with my wife or my son, which then kind of limits my choices. But yeah, I've been through periods of, you know, heavy stress where I binged really heavily on The Big Bang Theory, which I know that show usually gets a lot of flack from the geek crowd, but Whatever. It's an entertaining show, even if it is stupid. And a lot of it is certainly stupid or kind of misrepresentative, you know, if you want to nitpick it. But whatever. Sometimes you just need something funny. The Office is one of my favorite shows. So that's a big go-to. Right now we're watching through Cheers again. So there's a lot of different shows like that that it's like I could just put on. Like I could watch The Office anytime. I've rewatched the whole series over quite a few times, and I'll continue to do so. So those are some of the things that I do when something is kind of weighing down on me. It's not often that reading something weighs down on me that heavy, because if something is that heavy, I usually will be kind of selective of when I'm going to experience it. But the big effect that I usually have when something is heavy like that is I need to process it afterwards. So like, especially when I'm getting close to the end, I'm kind of thinking about when am I finishing this? So that way I can, you know, let my brain work on it and kind of process it all through. So I don't want to finish reading something where I'm like forcing myself to stay awake to get to the end of it, or, you know, I have to rush off to something else, right afterwards. Like I need to do it in a time where then after I'm done, like I can just let my mind kind of run free and process the stuff that I just put into it. That's how I approach that. And that's Sparky's second question. So that's my episode for today. My next episode, like I said, I'll be talking about a good deal of comics, because I read a lot of comics in the last week. I had a few things to read that I actually need to send to Sparky. So I read World War Hulk. I've been reading some Ed Brubaker Captain America stuff. I read some books that Jay sent me. He sent me a whole bunch of floppies that he was looking to clear out, so I got those to read. You can check Jay out on Best of the Rest. Sparky, you can check out our first episode of Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World. And you can also check him out on 2BT with his cousins there in Texas. Yeah, so a lot of comics to talk about next time. Check out those other shows on nerdylegion.com. Go to nerdylegion.com/audible to check out Audible and get a free audiobook when you give it a try. Great way to read some books. And until next time, go read Royal City. It was really fantastic. I'll talk more about that next time. Someone else will take your title, namely me, because I'm homicidal. That means murder. You sound like the herder, another MC. They try to get with me, I'll just break them and make them and rake them and take them and mold them and make them hold up the peace sign. Arsenal on the way. Probably.